Hi, I'm Pinakin Munshi, and today we are going to cover international trade payments process in global sourcing, that is payment process in global sourcing. So the learning objective here is understand the international trade finance and payment process in global sourcing, understand various payment modes available at the disposal of global sourcing manager, understand common discrepancies in documents which may lead to issue in the payment process. And the structure of this chapter is international trade finance and payments, payment modes in global sourcing, and common discrepancies in letter of credit which should be avoided. So what are the five common payment types that we commonly use in international trade? So one is cash in advance, which is nothing but advance payment. Letter of credit, also called as documentary credit or LC for short, documentary collections, open account, and consignment basis. And as we go ahead, we will look at each of these. So, international trade finance and payments, fund and non-fund based, payments. So, which are the non-fund based payments? So, one is letter of credit and the other is the bank guarantee. Normally, for the payments, we always use letter of credit. Bank guarantee is more like a guarantee. So, bank guarantee is issued as a performance guarantee, and it can be encashed only when there is a non-performance. Whereas, for payment purpose, it is normally the letter of credit which is used. The fund-based are the pre-shipment finance, post-shipment finance, and the project finance. So, types of payment, we will look at each of them one by one. Cash in advance. So, credit risk completely eliminated for the exporter. Payments made through wire transfer. Receiving bank's details are there. SWIFT code is provided. SWIFT code is, which is equivalent to IFSC code in the local parlance, what we use for the RTGS or NEFT kind of transaction. Seller's name and address, bank account details to be shared with the buyer. The other option given here is credit cards. But let me tell you, in international trade, we normally don't use credit cards. Credit cards are used only for personal transactions, for the procurement. The advance payment here, what we are talking about is where you make the payment as soon as the order is actually created and before the order can be executed. That means if the material is ready, the seller would actually give you a pro forma invoice, and using the pro forma invoice or against the pro forma invoice, you will make an advance payment, which will be through the SWIFT. Which is something like an electronic transfer. And once the payment is done, you would provide the details to the seller, who will then initiate the shipment process. International check, this method is less prevalent now, however, still continues to areas with limited banking facilities, risk of insufficient funds in buyer's account or stop payment exists. This is something similar to the local payments, Even in India, very few companies are really actually dealing in check payment. At least long tenure in the industry, I have never come across this international checks. But I presume that it may be operational in some countries. But this is not a method that we normally use. So, cash in advance application. So, importer is a new customer or has a less established operating history. So, it's a new customer. The supplier customers are not known to each other. So, in such a case, they will not resort to any payment method which is, exposing the exporter or the seller to any risk of non-payment once the order has been executed. The importer's creditworthiness is doubtful, unsatisfactory, and unverifiable. So sometimes it so happens that the supplier knows the buyer, but the buyer is not credit worthy, or he has a history of paying late or requires a lot of follow-up, etc. So in such a case, the seller may insist that the payment be made in advance. That means he will only supply the goods if the payments are made in advance. The political and commercial risk of the importer's home country is very high. So there are a lot of countries in Africa, even in Bangladesh. I mean, normally you always operate through a LC because it is considered to be a potentially risky country. So in such cases also, you may either opt for advance payment or you opt for a letter of credit. The exporter's product is unique, not available elsewhere, or is in heavy demand. So sometimes, you know, if the seller has a very unique product, then he may take advantage of this fact and not give you any kind of a credit, but he will insist on advance payment so that, you know, he takes the money upfront and then only supplies the goods to you. So the other type of payment is escrow. Now, escrow account is normally, these kind of accounts are provided by the bank. Importer sends the agreed amount to the escrow service provider, which is normally a bank. After the payment is verified, the exporter ships the cargo. So what happens is, escrow is where the payment is held in abeyance. That means until certain conditions are satisfied, the bank will not release the payment to the seller. So in this particular case, the buyer actually makes the payment. The payment is held in the escrow account, and this information is shared with the seller. So once he knows that the money is in the escrow account, he ships the material. And once the shipment has been done and the documents have been verified, etc., then the bank will release the payment to the seller. So after payment is verified, exporter ships the cargo. Importer has predetermined time to inspect the goods and accept the goods. And predetermined, so if within that time the importer does not accept the goods, the payment will still be released. Once goods accepted, payment is released to the exporter, and similar to pre-authorization of the credit card. Again, as I said, credit card is not something that we use in international procurement, but this is just an example. So we now come to the letter of credit. So in letter of credit, then there are two main types. There is at site and usance, and we will see what it means. So most secured instrument available to international traders. Of all the payment types, the letter of credit or documentary credit, as we call it, is one of the most secured, but it's also one of the payment methods which has the highest number of headache. And we will see why we say that. Commitment by a bank on behalf of the buyer that the payment will be made to the exporter. So here the bank becomes a guarantor that if you execute the order and you provide the documents, and mind my words, if you provide the documents as per the terms and conditions which are put in the LC, they will make the payment. Terms and conditions of the letter of credit has to be met. They have to be met in letter. The compliance is verified after presentation of all the documents. So when the seller presents the document through his bank to the issuing bank is the buyer's bank through which he has created the letter of credit or issued the letter of credit. So once they receive the documents and the documents are verified and found to be as per the letter of credit, then the bank will release the payment. The buyer establishes credit and pays his or her bank to render the service. So what happens is, for opening a letter of credit, the buyer has to actually request his bank that he wants a letter of credit or a documentary credit to be opened in favor of the seller. And today the practice is that certain collateral has to be provided. So either he has to pledge the overdraft limit or he has to deposit certain amount. So for example, if there is a LC for 1 lakh of rupees, then he may have to pledge, let's say, his overdraft limit of up to 25,000 or 30,000 rupees for issue of the letter of credit. Because in letter of credit, the bank actually guarantees to the seller that if you meet the conditions, I will make the payment, irrespective of whether the buyer makes a payment to the bank or not. The bank is, obliged to make the payment to the seller. Now, we talked at site and usance. Now, what does it mean? So, at site is, as soon as the shipment happens, the seller will compile all the documents as specified in the letter of credit, and they will submit it to their bank. Their bank will negotiate the LC. They will actually pass on the documents to the issuing bank. And once the issuing bank has verified the documents, they find that the documents are as per the LC terms and conditions. In terms of at site, they will immediately release the payment. So material may actually be on high seas. It may not have reached the destination port, but even then they will make the payment. But in usance, you are allowing a certain number of days of credit. So for example, if you have usance terms of, let's say, 60 days from the bill of lading date. So there, although the material may arrive at the port and the buyer takes delivery, he custom clears the goods, he takes delivery of the material, the payment to you will be made only on the 60th day from the bill of lading date. So this is the difference between the site and the usance. And the usance can be mutually agreed between the buyer and the seller. So some cases, it can be as high as 90 days or so. There is some limit by RBI where you cannot have the usance beyond certain number of days. But typically 60 days or 90 days is the kind of a usance that most buyers will settle for. LC is most useful when reliable credit information about a foreign buyer is difficult to obtain. So you are not really, sure about your seller. So about the buyer, and you don't know whether the buyer will make the payment. So in that case, you will actually insist that the buyer open an LC, because then at least it's a guarantee that if you fulfill all the conditions, you will get your payment. And in case you still don't get your payment, there are various redressal mechanism by which you can take up, and you can still get your payment. However, the exporter should have reasonable confidence on the foreign bank. Now, this is what happens. If the bank which is issuing the LC happens to be from certain countries which are generally not trusted, for example, Bangladesh is one example, then they may also insist, the seller will insist that the LC be confirmed by another bank, a reputed bank, which may be located in Europe or US or some such place. So normally, banks in UK or so will confirm. That means they again stand as a guarantee that they will ensure that the LC will be honored. So LC also protects the importer, since the documents required to trigger payment provide evidence that goods have been shipped as agreed. So it is also a kind of a guarantee that the payment will be released to the seller only after he has shipped the material, he has executed the order. And I'll come to certain more terms, a little ahead. Any discrepancy in the letter of credit will lead to negation of the payment. So if you find that the letter of credit had a list of conditions, and these conditions are not met, then the bank is not liable to make the payment. Now, there are certain clauses which say that if there are errors or there are discrepancies, the bank will still honor the LC, provided the buyer accepts this discrepancy. But then, in such cases, the bank will deduct certain penalty for every discrepancy. And sometimes the penalties can be as high as $100 per discrepancy. And I have come across even LCs where the charges are $100 per discrepancy, per set. So imagine the seller has put a condition that I want all the copies of the documents and I want 5 copies of the document. So imagine if there is one discrepancy, and since you have 5 set of documents, for that one discrepancy, $500 will be deducted. So LC conditions are to be actually scrutinized very, very carefully. And if you do not agree to some terms, then you have to ask the buyer to amend those terms in the LC. We will also look at some of the terms in the LC when we come to, what are the common discrepancies in the LC. And LC is a document which specifies a lot of conditions. All those conditions have to be perfectly matched. So there is an old joke which says that suppose the LC, there is a dead fly on the LC, then you also have to, kill a fly on your documents before submitting it to the bank. Okay, it's a joke, but the fact remains, because LCs are now electronically transmitted by the issuing bank to the customer or the customer's, or I'm sorry, the seller's bank. So this has to be taken care of. And I think I'll explain it when we come to that part. The issuing bank will typically use intermediary banks to facilitate the transaction and makes payment to the exporter. So sometimes they don't directly make the payment. They may use other intermediary banks in the country in which the exporter is located. Banks are not concerned with the quality of the underlying goods or whether each party fulfills the terms of the sales contract. And this is something which is very true. Banks are simply going as per the documentation. So if the documents are as per the LC conditions, if the documents are meeting the conditions set out in the LC, they will make the payment. The documents will not provide evidence whether the material quality is right or not, or whether there is any damage to the material or so. As long as the documents are in order, the banks will make the payment. The bank's obligation to pay is solely conditioned upon the seller's compliance with the terms and conditions of the LC. So that means the LC has to be, the documents provided by the seller has to be compliant in letter. That means as per the terms and conditions which are mentioned in the LC, if the documents are as per that, that's fine. It may not be so in terms of spirit. So that means, the actual quality of the product may be non-conforming, but that you cannot establish from the document, which the bank will not know. So it's only simply based on the documents that the bank will release the payment. Unless the condition of the LC state otherwise, it is always irrevocable, which means the document may not be changed or cancelled unless the importer, banks and the exporter agree. So when you say irrevocable, you cannot unilaterally, suppose I am the buyer, I opened an LC and the LC is received by by the seller. Now, I cannot go and cancel the LC tomorrow. If I have to do that, then I need the concurrence of the seller. Unless I have the concurrence, I cannot cancel the LC, and that is the reason it is known as irrevocable. That means you cannot revoke the LC unilaterally. If I have to do it, I need the concurrence of the seller as well. Now we are looking at the various kinds of LCs which are in use. So first one is the revolving LC. So with a revolving LC, the issuing bank restores the credit to its original amount each time it is drawn down. So what happens is you have an ongoing business where you are on a regular basis importing the material. So then instead of opening a fresh LC every time, you open a revolving LC. So what happens is that every time you receive the material, the amount is paid to the seller, okay? And I honor my commitment and I pay to the bank. The bank will again reactivate my LC That means my LC is again alive and active. So against the revolving LC, the exporter, the seller, can again ship material to me and the cycle continues. Confirmed LC. LC issued by a foreign bank, bank of the importer, is confirmed by exporter's bank or other bank from the country of the exporter. So this is what we talked about, you know, that if you are, let's say your buyer is from a country like Bangladesh, where you don't trust the local banks and you're not sure, then you have a confirming bank which actually confirms the LC, and they also stand like a guarantee to ensure that your LC will be honored. Standby LC. So similarly, standby LCs are often posted by exporters in favor of an importer to pay invoice when due. Actually, my understanding of standby LC is slightly different. Standby LC is like, you know, the importer or the buyer is going to make the payment, he is going to honor the payment. But in case he fails to do so for whatever reason, then the standby LC means that the bank will honor the payment. So this kind of LC actually kicks in when the buyer or the importer fails to honor his commitment and make the payment. So in which case the bank will actually make the payment on his behalf. Transferable LC. So in transferable LC, the buyer can transfer a part of the value of the LC or the full value of the LC in favor of one or more beneficiaries. Transferability should be expressed specifically in the LC. Since the buyer relies on the integrity of the beneficiary, transferability in favor of someone unknown has its risk. Now, where do you use this kind of LC? Let us say that you are dealing with an agent, a middleman. Now, the middleman doesn't have the finances to actually buy the product and supply it to you. So what he does is that he asks you to open an LC, but ultimately he is going to buy the product from a manufacturer. So in this case, they will insist on a transferable LC. And what he does is that he may keep a part of the amount with himself, and the balance he may transfer it to the manufacturer, so that whenever the LC conditions are satisfied, that means the goods are supplied, the documents are submitted, then the remittance which is made by the issuing bank, he will get the part that he wants to retain. Let us say that he says 10% has to be retained by him and the remaining 90% has to be transferred to the manufacturer. So this is one of the area where the transferable LCs are being used. Also, it could be used where, it's a project work and you find that the equipment has components which are supplied by 2-3 people. So in that case also, the transferable LC may require that the value of the LC value is actually split between 2 or 3 beneficiaries. So as when the remittance is done by the issuing bank, the LC remittance amount is then split between the beneficiaries as per the proportion set out in the transferable LC. Thank you.